Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dev,
you,
Kim,
you,
Jimmy, PJ, B, Austin, the hot block commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Bold with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
What up, what up? Welcome back to the roundtable, good folks. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan. I'm here with the host with the most, B. Austin and Akil Bayon. Jimmy's a little under the weather, so he'll be back with us next week. And PJ will be back in the fold soon as well. We're going to take you around the world of sports, but make sure you keep it locked here because we have more NFL training camp on tap later in the show as well. So make sure you join us right now in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to get into the conversation. You can also call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline. That number is 323-410-0012. Of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't remind you that for the very best in sports radio, make sure you tune in to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. and Daniel and Brandon of Sports Trap Radio right after them at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, both right here on Blog Talk Radio. But don't worry if you can't catch them live. You can hear and watch these guys and all of our other partner podcasts and webcasts at worldroomsports.blogspot.com. In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newviberadio.com, 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. But gentlemen, what's up? What's going on? How's your week been?
Man, can't complain. It's all good out here. I feel like, you know, it's that part of the year where, you know, they say the dog days of summer and there's not too much going on in sports, but you have, like, NFL training camp underway, NBA schedule. Right. We got college football news. So it's like nothing's going on, but a lot going on.
Man. Yeah, there won't be a Sunday until January where there's no football. So, you know, I'm not really big on watching the preseason besides getting information for what we got to do here, but it's here. It's back.
Man, I'm just happy. I'm happy to be here. I want to take the time to shout out our listeners, our audience, our Facebook, our social media membership, because we've got a lot of great dialogues going on. Any and everything that happens in sports, our fan base has an opinion on it, and they don't mind letting it be heard, even going at us, you know, if they don't agree with our positions. And I really appreciate it, man. I just want to shout them out quick.
Yeah, because they definitely be going at you.
Yeah, I want to shout them out somebody and give them love before I slander them.
Somebody made a whole video for an argument that y'all had. So that's what's up. I mean, at least that means the people are listening, they're watching, they're reading and they're communicating, but you know they got to get destroyed just like everybody else.
Oh yeah,
they got to get destroyed.
We're
like
competitive conversations, so prepare to be destroyed in that next debate.
Well, the most exciting thing that's happened to me this week is Shark Week on the Discovery Channel.
True.
Something that I watch every year. Usually, I'm watching Shark Week when like, I got a vacation plan, like, the next week, and that's not good because if it's a tropical vacation, you just finished watching Shark Week, you're a little skeptical about getting into the water. So, luckily, you know, I'm not going anywhere tropical anytime soon, so I'm good seeing people getting their legs bit off this year. It's all good. But let's get into what happened this week while everybody was on that grind. Of course, while you're on the grind, is brought to you by DirecTV. If you like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, including that NFL Sunday ticket, because football season is here, go to our website, warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo, and order yourself a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. if you call yourself a sports fan, then you got to have DirecTV. All right, man, Michael Beasley. This is a little disappointing because, you know, we thought the dude was doing better with his off-the-court stuff. But he was arrested because the police found marijuana in his car. Now, we know he's had some problems with the Mary Jane before. What do you guys take on this whole thing? They said an officer was filed on a traffic stop, and they found three cigarettes suspected to contain marijuana in his Mercedes after smelling marijuana during the stop. So he had possession of drug paraphernalia. So what's up with Mike Beasley, man?
Man, I feel like, I mean, this is like, he's been stopped numerous times smoking marijuana, and, you know, he even came out and said, you know, I basically vow and pledge I won't let this hinder me from achieving my goals as an NBA player. And it's just, I mean, now we all know he's not the only NBA player. Probably at least 50% of the NBA smokes marijuana. So I guess this comes down to how he didn't act probably in a more safe manner in terms of getting stopped. I mean, okay, you've been stopped once, or you've been stopped twice. Okay, at some point you need to understand if you're going to do something illegal like that, then you need to have a better system so you don't keep getting caught and caught up.
Haven't been around this young man for, man, it feels like the better part of 10 years. We've all kind of seen him grow up here in the D.C. area. And let me tell you, you know, for those that don't know, Michael Beasley has every bit as much talent as Kevin Durant. And so I look at their two situations and their life's course as kind of an example of, you know, you can take this path or you can take, you know, you can take that path. Now, what I mean by that is, yeah, Beasley's in the league. Yeah, Beasley's making a lot of money. But I guess in his mind, he can't get rid of his commitment to crumbling herb, to lighting the purple, to blowing the trees. I'm not necessarily condemning it, but there's definitely a sacrifice that comes with that. Because I don't think he'll ever attain the levels of success, stardom, and growth that he could by putting it on the shelf, even if it was just putting it on the shelf for a period of time. Because what I know of dude, allegedly, he's a consistent chiefer. Like, he blows it down during season, out of season, holiday time. It doesn't matter. He gets his Rick James on. So, you know, I at this point, is marijuana the worst thing in the world? Positively, absolutely not. Shout out to our audience that participates. But it does come at a cost when you're getting paid millions of dollars to play professional sports. It comes at a cost.
Yeah.
And there's a perception of not being as professional as you could be with it in your life.
Yeah. I just want to tell the audience, make sure you get into that chat room because even though Jimmy's not on the show tonight, he's definitely holding down the chat room. But, yeah, he couldn't be on the air because he's under the weather and he sounds like the Kimbe Mutombo right now. So
we need that
brother
to get
well soon. Yeah, nobody understands the Kimbe. All right, but this next story, man, this one is quite crazy. It's something that Kill brought to our attention the other day, man. I know you all remember former NBA player Chris Gatling because, you know, he was the guy who he played for so many teams around the league, but he wasn't a bum. He was like instant offense at the power forward position. He
played for every.
He's pleading guilty in a squatting scam. Now, what he did, it was in Paradise Valley, Arizona, I believe. He broke into the key box at a home, lived there for about a year. The police said that the homeowners lived in California and they left the power on. He lived there for about a year, and then he listed the home on Craigslist and tried to rent it out and make money from the home. Yo, what's up with your boy Chris Gatlin? First of all, how can he live there for a year? I mean, I know it has a key box. Do these people, is this just their Arizona home, or were they trying to sell this home? Kill, you got any information on that?
Man, it was, the house was listed, since they had a key box, it was listed on the market.
So nobody came to look at this house for a year? Over a year?
Yeah, that's a tough market. You know, some properties in Arizona went from $400,000 to $80,000 during
Arizona,
the
Detroit.
yeah, in Detroit, yeah, some houses that were listed for $400,000 dropped to $80,000. So I guess the market is pretty pretty dry out there.
That's a serious deflation. My whole take
on Detroit is definitely an exaggeration. Nobody's home values dropped as far as the ones in Detroit, but go ahead, Bill.
Yeah. My whole take on this, you know, from another angle, Chris Gatling made a great career for himself in the National Basketball Association. At one point in time, in 2000-2001 season, he was making a salary of $5,550,000. Chris Gatling, throughout the course of his 10-year career, which he was a 10-point-per-game scorer, so he certainly wasn't a bum, he made $29,498,827 and 0 cents, allegedly.
He must have spent $29
million.
Could have been a little
more, could have been a little less. But I guess the point, the driving point that I have, is how could you find yourself, yet again, we see an athlete going broke, blowing money fast. How can you blow $30 million and have to squat in a house in 2013 when just, you know, 10 years ago, you were a millionaire?
It was all good just a week ago. 10 years ago, I had everything. Listen, my question in all of this, I'm still dumbfounded that you can squat somewhere for a year and nobody ever comes to this house, and nobody ever catches you. Like, was he never at any point nervous that one day while he was asleep, somebody was going to come to look at this house? You know,
man,
I don't get it.
That's a good point, because I'm wondering that's probably how the whistle was blown and things came to light, because the owner has since sold the property, and Chris Gatling's attorney is saying this is all a big misunderstanding. But, you know, for it to sit for a year and not be able to sell and nobody to come to look at it once, that's crazy.
Right. Yeah, that's weird.
Squatters usually don't have attorneys.
Yeah, but like you said, he had money at one point, so he might have invested in prepaid legal and might have been paid on it. So I just don't see. Like, I'm sure that is how it probably eventually ended. Maybe the realtor came by with somebody and realized that somebody was in the house, so he didn't go in. Or maybe he knocked and confronted him or something. But a year, that's a long time. Like, that's one of those things where he lived there so long, he probably really started to believe that it was his house. So he figured, I'm about to move, so I might as well rent my house out to somebody. So I'm going to put it on Craigslist. Or he just thought nobody was ever coming back, so he was going to rent it out and get them arrested. I don't know, man. But,
wow.
I think he might be in line for the JoJo of the Week award, man.
Dope.
Damn it, Chris Gatling. More NBA news. I guess that was NBA related. But in NBA news, Minnesota Timberwolves rookie guard Shabazz Muhammad has been sent home from the NBA's rookie transition program because he violated a rule. That rule he violated was bringing a female guest into his hotel room. What are you guys' thoughts on this whole situation? He's not the first to be sent home from this program. And, you know, the rookie transition program is kind of like the NFL rookie symposium where they're, you know, trying to let you know about the games, the ins and outs, the ups and downs, things you need to watch out for. Basically, just trying to make your transition into the NBA a smooth one. So,
Didn't Rio Chalmers get caught smoking loud?
Rio and his Kansas.
Mike Beasley. And Mike
Beasley was in it. He actually admitted to being in their room, but it was Mario Chalmers and somebody else. Darrell Arthur. Mario Chalmers and Darrell Arthur, they were dismissed from the program. They had women and weed in their room. And they were both fined $20,000.
Beasley.
And then Michael Beasley admitted that he was in the room, and he was fined $50,000. So why did he get charged $50,000 and it was their room? Maybe because he lied about it.
Beasley admitted that weed is his woman.
But I'm wondering why he got fined more money than they did, though. Higher pick,
repeat offender.
More dough. Sorry, I don't know.
Repeat offender. He has a reputation.
Repeat offender? It was the rookie transition program. How could he have offended before? They judging you off college, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah,
they judged him from his interviews. Yeah, in his interviews, NBA pre-draft interviews, they probably said, now look, we understand that weed has been a problem in your history. So, you know, they probably brought that
strike.
Back home.
You already come in with one strike.
This gentleman, I'm kind of torn here, cause there's the young bull side of me is like, yo, why y'all can't let my man get some after hours yams? I mean, why can't he get his after hours yams on? But then the mature part of me is you're getting paid millions and millions of money to play a child game that you love. You can't put the coitus on pause while you're at the symposium for a couple. You're going to get all the coitus in the world. You're a professional athlete. Just chill.
See, and the bad thing was, just hours ago, they were in a session where they told them all of the rules. So it's basically like he left that session, went back to the hotel room, probably made some calls, and broke the rules that they just sat down and heard. Now, like, it's one of those things where, okay, the rule, it's probably a little stupid. But on the other hand, it may not be stupid, because if you allow that to happen, you know what I'm saying, it's not going to be one person there calling up chicks. It's probably going to be, you know, everybody there is going to call up some people. And it could get out of hand, and they could get into the type of trouble that the whole transition program is trying to prevent them from getting into. But all in all, okay, it's a silly rule. You're a grown man, and they're trying to tell you that you can't have company. But rules are rules, and they just gave you the rules, and then you went out and broke them. So, you know, I can't really say I feel sorry for him, even, you know, being somebody who would have been tempted to do the very same thing at that age in that very same situation. I still can't say that I feel sorry for him. Like, rules are rules. He broke them. And the bad thing is he has to go back and complete the – they don't let you out of this without completing it. So he has to go back next year and complete the transition program, even though he's not going to be a rookie. So they try to embarrass you.
That's kind of why I'm with you, Dev. I don't want to be too judgmental, because I'm not going to act like I probably wouldn't have done the exact same thing. But looking at it from a mature perspective, I'm like, yo, dude, you can chill. You have the next, at least you're a first rounder. So you have the next 4 years, even if you want to go to Joe Forte route and you're going to be a bust, you guaranteed at least $10 million over the next 4 years that you can trick off on toots. Like, come on, man.
You can go squat in somebody's house and bring toots to that. Like, you know, call your man Gatling up. So,
I agree with most of you guys. He should have, you know, weighed the cost-benefit analysis / risk-reward of, you know, breaking this rule just for, you know, to be with a female that evening. And, I think the rule is good, especially because some may bring in prostitutes, some may bring in groupies, some may bring in girls that he just met, and then with that may come the marijuana, may come the cocaine, may come getting drunk, missing classes, all these different things, breaking furniture in the hotel, who knows? So I think that's good. And in his case, he could have waited some days. Now, when I was 7, I believe he's 20, when I was 17, and I know we took an AAU trip to Las Vegas in my younger years, me and a couple of players, we met some females, brought them up to the room.
Whoa, Drosnitch.
Then unfortunately, our coach walked into the room and was like, "What are y'all doing?" I mean, it was crazy. Like, just one of those situations where you expect not to get caught. You know you're breaking a rule, then when you get caught, there's nothing you can say to defend it.
So. Yeah, and plus, he's another one where the league is probably already looking a little sideways at him. He had that whole controversy about his dad lying about his age, and, you know, so they're already probably looking at him as a problem child. So now they're going to embarrass him and make him come back, you know.
Basically, they're making you
come back to freshman orientation as a sophomore. That's messed up. But, hey.
There's two types of dudes. There's the yam farmer who's just addicted to yam farming, and then there's the guy that wasn't getting any yams, and he just can't wait to tell the chick in her ear that I play in the NBA. So I don't know what category he falls in, but yeah, dumb move. He'll learn from it. Ain't the worst thing in the world.
All right, well, this next story, this is a little crazy. In front of the New York Mets have a Class A affiliate, the Brooklyn Cyclones, and in front of their stadium, they have a statue of Jackie Robinson and Pee Wee Reese. It's that scene, I mean, if you've seen the movie 42, the scene from the movie when they were in Cincinnati, and Pee Wee Reese, he was from Cincinnati, and all of his family, they were at the game, but everybody was booing and saying all kind of racial slurs to Jackie Robinson, and he walked up to Jackie Robinson and put his arm around him just to show everybody in the crowd that he's with his teammate. So they, you know, touching moment in history. So they made a statue of it and put it in front of the Brooklyn Cyclone Stadium. Well, somebody defaced this statue with swastikas and racial epithets. The employees of the Brooklyn Cyclones, you know, came to work and found that the statue was defaced. They were able to clean off a lot of the stuff from the statue, but the stone underneath, you know, they were having trouble, so they had to call a company to help them treat that. Another case of, you know, what we still live in 2013 that a whole lot of people try to deny. I got any thoughts on this?
Yeah, definitely. And you hit the nail, like, right on the head for me. So, you know, here in the war room, you know, we use sports as a platform to get into all types of social dialogue. And there's two sides to the coin. You know, we definitely attack. Well, I'll speak for myself. I do not. My views and perspectives don't necessarily represent the views and perspectives of War Room Sports. This is B. Austin. you know, I get into these dialogues where on one side of the fence we've got what we've coined the black protectionists, you know, folks that are always quick to play the race card, quick to pull it out. And on the other side, you know, we have some folks of other ethnicities, predominantly Caucasian, that are quick to downplay and discount the fact that we still live in a society that's permeated by ethnocentrism and call it what it is, racism. So it's kind of like two sides of the same coin, opposite spectrums. And this is a perfect example, going through kind of the Trayvon Martin thing off the heels of that, off the heels of Riley Cooper, you know, where you have a lot of people saying, well, these things are blown out of proportion. It's not about race. It's not. Right on the heels of those two occurrences, here we have yet another occurrence to show us that we're not in a post-racial society, folks. And the more we stick our heads in the sand and the less dialogue we have about it, the less acknowledgement there is of it, the problem, it will continue to blossom and balloon because we're acting like it doesn't exist and like it's not there.
That's why I don't mind, because I know you gave a shout-out earlier to the people that we speak to on social media every day, you know, especially the folks on our Facebook page. Like, when those conversations start, like, I don't get mad at the white people who say the type of things that you're saying, because first of all, I'm happy that they're even in the dialogue, because a lot of people don't want to talk about it. So, you know, we keep saying in society we need to have a dialogue about race. So if we're having that dialogue, then we can't just attack everybody for saying something that we might not agree with. I mean, we can, in a mature and respectful way, you know, debate the issue, but why ask to have the dialogue if you're just going to attack everything that somebody says and make it personal? So, you know,
right.
I definitely give a shout-out to some of the people who aren't afraid to speak in what seems like a predominantly black forum. You know, I definitely give them props. Might not agree with everything you're saying, but, you know, if everybody's going to be afraid to have the dialogue, then, you know, we're never going to solve these problems. I mean, I don't see the problems being solved in my lifetime because ways of thinking, you know, methodologies, all that stuff is passed down. And it may not be as prevalent as it used to be, but as long as, you know, as long as you have family and people keep having offspring, you're going to pass down how you think onto these people.
When nurture is so far ingrained that it almost becomes nature. So you've got to uproot the nurture that has kind of become a part of almost the genetics, at least, of culture. And you've got it being passed down. It's such an ugly thing that I think a lot of people like to put their heads in the sand and pretend like we've moved past it. You know, and I look at what goes on in the African-American community, and particularly some of our urban centers, and I really think we've digressed. Like, not necessarily under the pressures of the same oppression or racism or things like, but I think as a people, when you've got all of these, all of the black-on-black crime and all of the, just all of the minstrel stuff, tomfoolery and the coon, I think we've digress a little bit, man. I think we've taken some steps backwards from where we were coming off of the civil rights movement and the leadership. But that's another topic for another time. Here we had the Brooklyn Cyclones, New York City, you're seeing the ugly face of racism rear its head, and here we are. Yet again, another racist or racial story in the news media that, you know.
Yeah, you could possibly have one every week.
Yeah, and I'll speak to that point. Actually, in the Blacks, the Blacks Wax Museum in Baltimore, they actually show the history from slavery all the way to the lynching, obviously Jim Crow lynching, and then the last part, as you walk through the museum, it shows now we're self-lynching ourselves, you know, with the black-on-black crime, with the low education, attainment, all those things. And also to speak to this point, it's like it almost seems like every week, as you gentlemen mentioned, that there's something that we can attach to. Uh-oh, here's racism, you know, just out in the front. And this time they added swastikas to it, just giving Hitler his due as a racist. There was another story that went under the radar that we talked about earlier, where there was a track star at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, African-American. He was running by the campus, and then a pickup truck pulls up, and they start calling him the N-word over and over and over. He tried to ignore it. They kept calling him over and over. They didn't come to him. He didn't go to them, but he went to the school authorities and the deans, the chancellor, and the dean and chancellor actually wrote a letter to everyone on the campus saying that if we can find these gentlemen, let me have a dialogue with them so they can get to know me as a person and not as what maybe they were taught. So he didn't have any.
Give that brother a round of applause, man.
They don't seem to have the vocabulary for a dialogue. They might not be ready for that. But
their uncle may be their brother.
Yeah, just don't be in denial, man. Everybody, you know, this is the world that we still live in. Even if you're not that person, still, get outside of your box, you know what I'm saying? See something from, you know, an outside perspective. Because a lot of people think because they're not like that and their family's not like that, so they can't believe that it's still going on in the world. It still goes on, but look, we're going to move on. Real quick, we're going to give out some birthday shouts before we tell you guys, you know, how to get in touch with us. But birthdays, as usual, brought to you by Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. For the best and comprehensive treatment of injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremities, visit Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. Treating patients in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, and beyond, visit alexandriapodiatry.org. Or call 703-379-0700 and ask for the good doc, Dr. Monique Roll, and make sure you tell him War Room Sports sent you. Roger Federer turns.
My birthday, yeah!
32 today. Arguably, I say, the greatest tennis player of all time. We'll see how he finishes out, see if he gets that title universally. Rashard Lewis, like I hear a lot of people slandering my man Joe Johnson, saying he was like the most overpaid player in NBA history. I don't know if Rashard Lewis is the most overpaid player in NBA history, but he's far more overpaid than Joe Johnson ever was. So take my man Joe out of that conversation. Rashard was the second highest paid player in the NBA two seasons ago, and he's never been anywhere close to the second best player in the league. But he turns 34 today, so happy birthday, Rashard.
Bum.
Overpaid.
Bruce Matthews, the great football player, turns 52 today. Of course, we know his bloodlines running deep in the league right now. Of course, our Philadelphia Eagles, me and B. Austin, we got the wrong one. So happy birthday to Bruce Matthews. And Jerry the Shark Tarkanian turns 83 today.
Heart! My birthday, yay!
So we definitely want to give a big War Room salute to all of these gentlemen on their birthdays. But make sure you guys check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send us a message about the company, the show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. Do not miss the boat because the prices are going up. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the Memorabilia tab. Buy yourself some War Room Sports merchandise. Click the Blog tab. Read our latest articles in the All's Fair in Sports and War blog, then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, to get in on those conversations, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, and download our free War Room Sports mobile app on your Android and iOS devices, and watch our videos at WarRoomSportsTV.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio if you don't want to create an account. You can sign in through your Facebook and Twitter accounts because everybody's on Facebook and Twitter. And while you're at it, click follow to get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. So to call in and speak with us, dial the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Yeah, so like I said, we got JW the Blueprint in here holding down the chat room. If you haven't gotten in it yet, make sure you do that, blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. Get your voice heard during the show. Let's get into some hot topics, fellas. Of course, hot topics are brought to you by Audible. Your schedule too hectic to read as much as you want? Well, try audiobooks. Kick back. Let someone else do the reading for you. All you got to do is visit Audible. Sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you can be listening to the latest bestsellers hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done at the same time. Tiger Woods, fellas. Tiger Woods, he continues his impressive season, but it's really not impressive to most because, like we always say, Tiger has set the bar so high that people aren't impressed when he wins a bunch of non-majors. Like, that major is still eluding him, but he did win the Bridgestone last week. They've already teed up today in the PGA Championship, so here's another chance for him to win a major. He kind of fizzled out at the end of the first round today, and I think he's maybe six off the lead, but there's so many people in front of him. This might be, you know, unless he does something spectacular in the coming days, this may be another letdown for Tiger and his fans, or Tiger and his, you know, maybe something good for his haters who think that, you know, Tiger has to only win majors in order to do something impressive. But by most golfers' standards, like what he's doing this season is impressive. What are your thoughts, guys? I mean, he's
this is
in the round today.
Tiger.
If he doesn't win today, this weekend, Kill, it'll be 6 years between majors if he gets one next season. So what do you think?
Yeah. A basketball fan in an NBA game.
You're breaking up, brother. I can't hear what you're saying.
Yeah, he must be broadcasting from the War Wagon.
From the Matrix.
I think that a part of this is, and I don't know how to ascribe a percentage to it, but a part of this is now mental. Because if Tiger was 10 steps ahead of everybody at his peak, I still believe that Tiger Woods is 3 to 4 steps ahead of everybody now from a talent.
Shooting backwards just for practice?
Yeah, shooting backwards just for practice. But being 3 to 4 steps ahead of everybody with a mental block, I think he gets into these majors and he's placing so much pressure on himself. He's not playing his game loose and free. And it's a alpha situation where you've got other alpha dogs, you've got other sharks in the water, and if they're not afraid of you, it doesn't matter how fast you run, how high you jump, how straight you shoot, they're not afraid, and it's all mental. So a lot of guys aren't afraid of Tiger anymore, and so now you've got those things, those three things combined to put that obstacle or that brick wall in his path. The lack of fear when it's
That's a good point because, like you said, he used to go into most tournaments with a mental advantage just because, you know, everybody else were cowards. But, yeah, you know, and we've seen that before. We've seen that with athletes like Mike Tyson. Like when he was on his run in the 80s, you know, he won fights before he even stepped into the ring because these people were scared to death. You know what I'm saying? When Buster Douglas kind of showed people, you know, his vulnerabilities, then people went into the ring and they weren't so afraid of him anymore. They knew that there was something that they could do to possibly, you know, get over on this guy, and his career went downhill from there. Like I said, Tiger, I don't think he's going downhill. He's just in a chase that no other golfer, no other current golfer is in, you know, with the amount of majors he has and how close he is to Jack Nicklaus. So by no means do I think he's going downhill, but you definitely make a great point in saying, you know, these guys are going into the tournament and they're playing their games. They're no longer just thinking about what Tiger's doing or afraid of Tiger.
Second place, third place.
Yeah.
They believe they can win.
His MO, you know, is usually to get leads and to just hold on to leads throughout the tournament. See, that's where he's gone wrong in these majors. Like, he's having first rounds that aren't that great. Yeah, if you want to call it that, he's a great front runner.
He's LeBron.
But now, you know, trying to come back from playing bad rounds, you know, and he's not doing great on Saturdays and Sundays. It's just a little harder for him, but he's winning the non-major tournaments. I don't know.
Now, what I was going to say is this is the equivalent of an NBA team winning 67, 66 games, and everybody saying, yeah, you know, they'll probably win the championship or at least go deep in the playoffs, and then losing in the first round. So the 66 games would be these non-major tournaments that Tiger's winning, and then the majors would be the playoffs where he's just not doing well. Now,
which Carl Nuggets.
another thing that we've looked at, we've all know in his last several majors, Tiger has performed very well on days 1 and 2, and then horribly in days 3 and 4. So maybe he's going to do like a Tim Tebow where, you know, first couple of days he's going to do bad, and then the last couple of days he's just going to play like crazy, be under par, and then win the whole thing.
I'm rooting for him.
Well, as Dev has pointed out, he's historically been more of a front runner than a come from behind type of guy that likes the pressure. So I don't know where that pencils into all of this.
Yeah. All right, well, like I said, go figure. We'll see what he does this weekend for the remainder of the PGA Championship. Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, is back in the news. There is actually an autograph broker. Yes, there is a such thing as an autograph broker. They told the Four Letters on Tuesday that Johnny Manziel was paid $7,500 for signing like 300 mini and full-size helmets back in January while he was at the Walter Camp Football Foundation
event. Man needed
event.
Rims for his ride.
So, I mean, this is one of those situations where we always talk about it. The NCAA makes so much money off of these guys, and as soon as these guys, you know, try to make a little bit of money for themselves, you know, it's such a big violation. So he's under investigation. See, but this is like, this kind of goes back to when we were talking about Shabazz Muhammad and his at the NBA transition thing. We know the rules are stupid, and we know that there's a major fight going on to compensate, either compensate the players, change the rules, things of that nature. But right now, while it's going on, we still know that rules are rules. So I'm a little on the fence. Like, you know, I wouldn't see anything wrong with this, you know, in the larger scheme of things. Like, if you can get money from your autograph, then why wouldn't you get money for your autograph? But at the same time, we know that there's rules against it. So at the same time, while you're such a big figure in college football right now, why would you be so stupid as to do something like that publicly? So, you know, I'm a little bit in the middle of this one.
I'm not on the fence with this one, Dip. I'm not on the fence with this one at all. And here's why. Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, are the rules silly? Absolutely. Are they fair? Heck no. But life really isn't fair. And the key to life is playing from a position of wisdom, having knowledge. And Johnny Football doesn't come from a place in life where he doesn't have the benefit of the knowledge of what he's doing and what he's involved in. Johnny Football, yeah, he's a young dude, but he's an adult, and he's very aware of what his status is, what his fame is, and he already comes from fortune. So you're telling me that you want to capitalize on your fame, sign some autographs, and make $7,500. Is that money that you couldn't get from elsewhere? Is that money that you actually really need? I don't know. That's open to debate. But he definitely was aware, because the autograph broker even said, or played a tape where Johnny Football said, you can't share this with anybody, or you can't tell anybody. If you do, I won't mess with you.
See,
so
but
now,
that's where it gets
selfish nature.
It is stupid. Because why are you, you know he's recording you. Like, why are you doing something so public? That's what I'm saying. There's proof of it. What do you mean, don't share this? Don't record this.
Yeah.
Go ahead, girl.
So not only that, but now you've put your team in jeopardy, because they can't let him play while this investigation is ongoing. They risk forfeiting any wins that they may get. So he's now putting his team in jeopardy. He's putting his draft stock in jeopardy, because he's already – the knock on him is he's already a great college guy, but people kind of question. He's 6'1", you know, he's a running quarterback. He's not really a pocket dude. So there's already a chance that his draft stock could fall a little bit to begin with. But now, after all of the publicity he's received for boneheaded stuff, if he doesn't play for 5 or 6 games in the 2013-2014 season, you could see him fall out of the first round and fall to the second, fall to the third. God forbid, even in a Matt Barkley situation, to end up in the fourth round. So, Johnny, this $7,500 has cost him considerably, and Johnny Football has this I'm going to do it my way attitude of kind of entitlement, and it's cost him. It's costly.
See, with me, like, and I definitely understand what you're saying. I mean, because that's why I said I'm on the fence, because, I mean, if we're just going to throw out the fact that the rules are silly because that's a given and we already know that, then he definitely was wrong. Like, you just don't you don't openly – I mean, damn, try to sneak or something. He's just sitting in a hotel room for like an hour signing autographs, letting the dude make 2 different videos of him on his cell phone. So, like I don't get that part. As soon as you're pointing your phone at me to take a still shot, a video shot, or anything, like, we don't have a deal, because I no longer have the ability of denial, because you're recording me. And this dude went off and snitched, like, you know, just like we said, and now he's in this trouble. So, Like, I don't even get it. If you're going to break the rules, then be a little more discreet about it. But, yeah, the rules are definitely dumb, though. I can't write
I
my name on something, and if somebody wants to pay me for writing my name, I can't do it. Like, some things definitely need to be
changed.
That's
silly. I know I'm gonna get trash for this, but if all things were equal, it would be okay. It's what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and vice versa. That is, but Johnny Football does not come from a place where he's not afforded access to knowledge, information, and financial support.
I mean, at the same time, like, I can't really speak on his financial situations. Even if his parents are filthy rich, that doesn't mean that they ever give him $7,500 at one time. You know, he's still a kid.
I'm sure they don't. But I'm pretty sure that he's well advised as well, as opposed to some folks that may be in his position as an athlete, but may not come from the same resources. And may not
come
we
already know he doesn't take too well to advisement, so we can throw that out. Hey, real quick before we move on, let's go to Rob on the Digital Extreme Hotline out in San Diego. Rob, what's up with you?
What's up, y'all?
So
how y'all doing, man?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good, man. This is actually I want to talk about John. Dell, first of all, same ones with Donna. You should have thought about that, you know, before you got due to sign your stuff. Pretty move. I don't think you have to do the good old boy.
Hey, Rob, your phone's breaking up. Your phone's breaking up. Try to call us right back.
I'll call y'all back, man.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, it's a situation. Like I said, we already know that, like B. Austin said, Johnny Manziel is definitely in the camp of doing it his way. So we'll see how everything plays out. I see a lot of people, you know, have said they think he should just roll out, you know, skip the season and go into the draft.
Yeah.
I don't know what that would do for his stock. I don't know if that would help his stock or hurt his stock. I don't even know what his stock is at the moment because he's one of those guys – who wins the Heisman, but I still hear people, you know, critiquing his game, you know, kind of like on a Tim Tebow, but not on that level because he can actually throw a football, so it's a little different.
At this point, he has to weigh the benefit, do a cost-benefit analysis. Do you stay there and risk the suspension and have a half season, or do you just say, F it, cut your losses and declare for the draft, and that half season can't really hurt you? The last thing people saw of you was you winning the Heisman.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. Well, let's talk about a little baseball, man, because we know stuff has been going down. We've been talking about the whole biogenesis thing for the last few weeks. Before I get into that, I just want to give a shout-out to all the Braves fans out there, because we know the Atlanta Braves are on a 13-game winning streak. They just finished sweeping the preseason World Series champion Washington Nationals, and they have a 15.5 lead game. I mean, a 15.5 game lead, excuse me, in the National League East. So, you know, some are thinking that the Braves are currently the best team in the National League. They're definitely by far the best team in the National League East. And, you know, I don't want to brag, but remember, at the beginning of the season, I did pick them to win that division.
You did.
The Nationals, wow. 15. Like, the Phillies, I didn't expect anything from. So I'm not surprised that they're like 17 games behind the Braves. But the Nationals, you know, everybody jumped on that wagon. Everybody drank that Kool-Aid. Myself didn't think they proved enough, you know, for people to be all out and all in with them when the season started. But 15.5 game lead? At this mark?
Yo, man, shout out to the Montreal.
That's still surprising
Expos,
me a little bit.
Shout out to the Expos, yo.
So shout out to the Braves for running away with this thing, unless they have one of the most massive collapses in Major League Baseball history. It doesn't seem like they're going to be waiting for anybody to run up on them from the pack. Now, we know A-Rod got hit. He got hit hard. He didn't get the lifetime ban that was floating around, but 13 players got suspended. 12 of them got 50 games. Alex Rodriguez got suspended through the 2014 season, which is 211 games. Now, he has officially appealed it, so he's playing at the moment. But 211 games, like, why? We keep talking about it, but why so harsh for Alex Rodriguez in comparison to everybody else?
I think because at the Major League, they have evidence that he obstructed justice in this manner in terms of whether – recruiting other players, trying to, mess up tests and information. And, you know, the reason why all these players were able to accept the suspension because of all the evidence that they had. Now, we don't know exactly what evidence they had on A-Rod, but apparently they felt strong enough that an arbitrator would agree with the 211 games. That's like a record, Joe, right? Like 211 games. That's crazy.
Oh, my bad. I forgot. Ryan Braun got over 50. He got the rest of the season. He got like 65. We're going to see. I mean, I have a feeling that an arbitrator would come in and maybe reduce this to 100. That's the number that I'm thinking. To me, and this is the way I've seen it the whole time, I just think that Major League Baseball is trying to help the Yankees out. I think they're trying to help them get out of the rest of this contract. So they were trying to give him, you know, the biggest suspension possible to give the Yankees more ammo to be able to get out of this deal. Go ahead before I move on to that point.
I was going to say, so giving him the suspension on at face value, the 211 games, I think saves the Yankees this season and next. So that's approximately $35 million in savings on against a $100 million liability. But how does that help them further get beyond just the $35 million. Is there something else there that suspension would trigger in terms of the Yankees getting out of the full contract?
So you're saying how can they get out of more than what the suspension, you know?
Yeah, like more than the 214, the 211.
I think there's some loopholes there that they're going to try to go after, you know, missing
if
a player
retires,
for that
maybe.
Long.
If he retires.
Yeah, I mean, they may
shout out to 211 games, as 211 is the code for robbery, which is what some feel as though A-Rod did. He performed a 211 on him, so maybe that's why. But I can see if I'm A-Rod, I'm gonna appeal it. I'm cool. I'm gonna appeal it because I'm trying to get as much of my money. Leave no stone unturned. Leave no dollar on the table. But I'm kind of cool with a season and a season and a quarter losing $35 million, but still keeping $65 million versus the lifetime ban, which would have allowed the Yankees to.
All right, so here's another little nugget about the players that were suspended. I'm hearing a little bit of an uproar because they're saying, okay, every 12 out of the 13 players suspended were Latino. The only one who's not Latino is Ryan Braun. They said 9 out of the 12 are Dominican. So what do you guys think is the reason? You know, is there something unfair going on, or is there just, you know, a lot of Dominican players who just don't give a
thing? I just think because in their countries, you can pick some of this stuff up at, like, their equivalent of CVS. Like, you can go to CVS and get some clear cream, some testosterone, and it's nothing. So when they come here, they're like, well, you know, there's really not that taboo of, oh, man, you're using steroids. And that's probably how a lot of them get here, from using steroids at an early age, and they're knocking the ball out the park.
It's not a part of their baseball culture, and so they continue to practices that got them to where they are now, not understanding that here in the U.S., the almighty man frowns upon his game being tampered with, and so there it is. I mean, there are some that would go the race card route because, okay, you got Latino players, and then the question would be, well, was there test results from folks of other ethnicities that got, but we don't know at this point. We don't have that information. All we know is the ones that were suspended, and it happened to be, as Kiel put it, I think brilliantly, it's not frowned upon in the leagues that they play in prior to MLB.
Yeah, so besides Braun and A-Rod, you had Nelson Cruz, Johnny Peralta, Antonio Bastardo, Sergio Escalona, Jordani Valdespin, Cesar Puello, we tested my Spanish now, Everett Cabrera, Faustino de los Santos, Francisco Cervelli, Fernando Martinez, Jesus Montero, and Jordan Alberto. All suspended.
Man, it sounds like
50 games.
Sounds like Tony Montana's posse.
and since the performance enhancing drug policy has been in place, that's 2005, 39 of the 67 players suspended have been from Latin America, and 20 of those players have been from the Dominican Republic. So I think it's a lot of merit into what Akil brought up, because it's just different where they come from. And like you said, Bielsa, that's probably how a lot of them got here in the first place. So,
Chi-chi, right. Get the yayo.
All right, so in the NBA, y'all know Greg Oden, Benjamin Button signs with the Miami Heat. It seems like any player out there who may have something left in the tank, veteran, even a young guy like Oden who just hadn't been able to play, it seems like everybody wants to go to the Heat. That's the free agent destination right now. They're winning championships, and everybody wants to be a part of it, even if they don't have to play a part in it. So Greg Oden has signed a 2-year deal with the Heat. The contract is going to pay him $1.03 million this coming season and $1.14 million the next season. But he has the player option, so if he picks up that option, he can make that in 2 years. Remember, he's only 25 years old. He's already earned like $24 million. Well, he's already made like $24 million in salary since being the number one overall pick for Portland. I'm not going to say earned, because he really hasn't earned it. He's only played in 82 career games because his knees are trash truck juice.
Made of paper mache.
He hasn't played since like December of 2009. See, first of all, we all knew this was going to happen. We spoke about this for weeks. We all pretty much agreed that watch he signs with the Heat, and I kind of added more to it saying watch he sign with the Heat and never gets injured again. And that's just going to assure them one or two more championships, because they're finally going to have, a big man that they covet, even if it's just on the defensive end, because we all know he can play defense, he can rebound. When he was healthy, for the little bit of time that he was healthy, he was far from a bum. So what do you guys think this will do for the Miami Heat?
I think it's definitely a step up on Udonis Haslem and Joel Anthony.
Goombie's a
I don't
step
know.
Up.
I think if we step away, I'm going to step outside of my loathing of super teaming and hate that I spew that way, and just look at it objectively. It was a great move for all involved, because for the Miami Heat, they get a quality, what could be a quality big man on the cheap. So I'm paying a guy that can give me, when healthy, 12 and call it 12 and 9 and 2 blocks, I'm paying him $2 million over the next 2 seasons. Where they do that at? I mean, bums and get paid.
Low risk, high reward.
And then it's a commercial, it's an audition for Oden, where he could end up auditioning for other teams, come out of it with a chip, and move on to a real contract at the age of 27 and as you say, if he never gets injured again, really make that A-list.
Not even a he can audition just to he can get his chemistry together with LeBron, and LeBron can drag him around wherever he goes.
Take him
if
on
he
tour.
Ever leaves Miami.
Take him to Cleveland.
Take him to Cleveland, L.A., the LeBron Championship
LA.
Tour, the LeBron Super Team
hey.
Tour. And
My take, I think that it's an interesting signing because you do have Birdman coming back, you do have Haslam, you do have Bosch. I mean, we all know Joel Anthony was not good at all. But in terms of how much he plays and if he plays in crunch time, you know the Heat, they normally went with Bosch at – a lot of times they went with Bosch at the 5 and LeBron at the 4 in crunch time. So now will Oden play himself into that rotation where in money time he's at the 5 and Bosch is at the 4, LeBron at the 3 for their front court. So I'm interested to see what that does to that lineup and Birdman. Like, if you ask me, I'm not saying Birdman won the finals for them, but he has such critical activity level plays that I don't think Oden can make. Now, Oden can probably make
the finals for him.
Yeah, I mean, he has some activity plays where I don't even think Oden's knees will allow him to make some of those plays. But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. He may end up on the bench in the playoffs.
Well, speaking of people who want to go to the Heat, this is the most, this is
all
shameless,
respect.
For real.
All of
Deshaun
none.
Stevenson, who everybody knows has always gone at LeBron James from back in his Wizard days when LeBron was with Cleveland. At one point he called LeBron overrated. When Dallas beat the Heat in the NBA Finals, remember the day after he wore that shirt? I think it said something like F. LeBron or something crazy like that. Now Deshaun Stevenson wants to go to the Heat and actually tweeted asking LeBron to help him get that done. Now when it's all said and done, since they did drop Mike Miller, they'll have another roster spot. Do you think there's any way the Miami Heat and LeBron James, who probably has some power in this situation, do you think anybody's trying to hear that?
No, and no. And the phrase was he had a shirt that said, LeBron, tell me how my Dirk tastes.
So I just hyped that up, huh? F LeBron. He didn't say that.
Why? I'm chill. Why do you think it won't get done? Because I have my reasons why it can get done.
Well, I mean, remember they had that situation. Then they had a situation where, like, Soldier Boy, I think, came to Deshaun Stevenson's defense against LeBron, and then they don't like each other.
I think that a lot of that is contrived, and I think in this day and age of femininity within athletics, male athletics, a lot of these dudes, once they get past, they see the notoriety, they see the glamour, they see what LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh are kind of putting together. They see their ability to laugh and giggle and dance and have a good time, make a lot of money, wear women's clothes, and it's attractive to them. And so I believe that it's not really – I don't think there are many true I-hate-you rivalries in the NBA anymore. And so even though they went through their little beef, their little tiff or whatever – I believe that Deshaun Stevenson is genuinely down to go play for the Heat. Now, the question is, being that LeBron is a little sensitive, is his sensitivity allow him to get over it? From a basketball standpoint, it makes sense. Stevenson's not the shooter that Mike Miller is, but then Mike Miller's not the defender that Stevenson is. So you bring Stevenson in, you're getting defense, you're losing shooting, but Deshaun Stevenson's not a bad spot-up shooter either. So you still have some shooting.
He's been bad. He shot, like, under 40% from the field, period.
Well, standing out
the last few years. And he hasn't shot a good percentage from out there either. And as far as defense goes, I've always looked at him as a good defender, but I think his reputation might be a little more than what it really should be. First of all, you know, how many killers were at that position, you know, in the last 5 years or so, you had like Kobe, Dwayne Wade. The two guard position hasn't been all that great, and it's not like he was shutting down Kobe and Dwayne Wade. So when he went against the best, he got his ass bust. So I don't know. I don't think, like you said, like the beef might be contrived, you know. But and at the same time, you talk about LeBron's sensitivities. He also has a want and a need to be liked. So he might welcome him into the fold just because of that.
Yeah, it's another
but
person.
But I don't think
like him.
I think the Heat are cool on the wing. You know, I don't think they need. I don't think they need.
They have an abundance. They have an abundance of shooters. Ray Allen is a shell of himself, but he still can hit trades. He still can shoot. Shane Batiboy still can shoot. Norris Cole is a decent shooter. James Jones doesn't
Daddy
get
Cole.
In the playoffs. Daddy King, yeah, Daddy Cole. They've got shooting, so I don't think that you have to go out and pursue an actual shooter to replace Mike Miller. So I don't know. I don't know. I think
we'll see if his shameless dribbling gets him a job in Miami. LeBron, he's gonna turn dude into one of his bathers, one of the royal bathers.
The royal penis is clean, Your Highness.
LeBron should make him throw rose petals at his feet for 3 months.
Shauna. Yeah, he's a Charlie for that one.
Yo,
but,
what do you expect from a dude that has Abraham Lincoln tattooed on his neck, though?
Yeah. Like, has he ever said what that, is there a meaning to that, or he just saw a nice picture of Abraham and went for it?
I think it has something to do with the slavery and freeing the slaves.
There's also the dude who had an ATM machine in his kitchen. Like, I don't get these sometimes.
He's a dude that let that the bum three-point shooting dude, Damon Jones, rattle his cage.
All right, well, enough of that jabroni. We all know that the NBA season tips off in late October, October 29th to be exact. Just a few key mentions from the schedule, because that came out. Of course, the reigning champion Heat. They're going to open up the season at home against Akil's Chicago Bulls. Derrick Rose will be back in the fold, unless he has some kind of crazy setback. So we get to see right offhand, you know, how these two teams match up. It's not going to mean much, but, you know, somebody's going to try to send a statement, most likely the Bulls. In the regular season, they seem to have Miami's number anyway. See, everybody got to get, you know, these guys turn it up a notch when the playoffs come. So everybody gets this false confidence during the regular season, and then they take it to everybody in the playoffs. Of course, as usual, opening night is going to feature a matchup between Staples Center tenants, the Lakers, and the Clippers. Doc Rivers is going to make his coaching debut. And the Orlando Magic versus the Indiana Pacers is going to kick off the opening night tripleheader. Now, you guys get to see Dwight Howard make his Houston debut when they host the Bobcats the next night. They gave him an easy one. And then Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, you're going to see them in black uniforms for the first time that night as they play against the Cleveland Cavaliers with Kyrie Irving. Christmas Day, you know you can't have Christmas without the Lakers. And lately, the Lakers versus Miami, probably like ever since Shaq joined Miami, the Lakers have been playing Miami since on Christmas Day. But it's going to have five games. You're going to have Chicago at Brooklyn, Oklahoma City at New York, Miami versus the Lakers, and Miami actually has to go on the road for that, and they're the champions. And Houston at San Antonio and the Clippers at Golden State. And speaking of what I just said, Shane Battier had a problem with that. He tweeted, the schedule I got said that we're on the road for Christmas and Turkey Day. I think I received a bad copy. It is kind of crazy to make the reigning champs travel on these holidays, but they're a traveling road show. So, you know, you get them on the road, they get that superstar treatment out there.
Sure to sell out.
The, That's the NBA and that's the NBA schedule. And the second night, you know, nobody mentioned. I don't know why, because this is a big game, man. The Sixers opened up their season against the Miami Heat on night two of the season. So go Sixers. Everybody,
we get
probably
to get punched in the early.
Stop hating on the Sixers. Stop hating. All right, everybody. Check out our website, worldroomsports.com. Call in and speak with us about any of today's topics. Dial the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline, 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, you know the drill. Just press 1 if you want to talk. We're going to talk some NFL. NFL Wrap is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows, ours, directly from your computer, your iPhone, your Android phone, your BlackBerry, or your Palm phone. But as our homie Jimmy always tell you, if you have a BlackBerry or a Palm phone, report to your roof and leap. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory or storage wasted. Downloading is easy. Just click on the Stitcher logo on our website and listen, or download to your mobile phone directly from that page. Before you do, enter the promo code The War Room, all one word, for a chance to win a cash prize. Stitcher Smart Radio, smarter way to listen to radio. All righty, football season is almost upon us, I would say. It is upon us for those diehard fanatics who want to watch every single moment of football they could possibly watch. And we just want to say real quick, congrats to the 7 new Hall of Famers. We got Larry Allen, Chris Carter, Curly Colt, Jonathan Ogden, Bill Parcells, Dave Robinson, and Warren Sapp. They were all formally inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame during the enshrinement ceremony in Canton this past weekend before that Hall of Fame game between the Achilles Dallas Cowboys and the Miami Dolphins. They actually left Romo out of that game, Kill. And he had, like, surgery on a cyst in his back. I heard it was nothing serious. They just, you know, kept him out. It's just the first preseason game. Because he hasn't missed a snap in training camp, right?
No, he hasn't. Well, he missed some snaps in training camp. But what it is our offensive line sucks. We have a lot of injuries, so they don't want him to get even hurt even more by
no
him
doubt.
Playing a game like that with a horrible offensive line.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of your offensive
line,
well, we'll get to that in a minute. But we got some NFL rule changes for 2013. We actually spoke about this when they were first proposed a few months back. But if people forgot, some of the rule changes for this season, leading with the crown of your helmet will be called not just on defense, but it'll be called on the offense. And the video that the league keeps showing to people to understand this new rule is a video of Adrian Peterson, how against the Bears he broke through the line and the tackler came up to get him and he just put the crown of his helmet in this guy's chest. So that's going to be illegal now. As far as coaching goes, if a coach illegally throws a challenge flag on a scoring play or a turnover, the team is either charged a timeout if none is available, or a 15-yard penalty. You know, previously that play was ruled unreviewable and the call stood. Another rule, all players except kickers and punters will be required to wear thigh and knee pads. A 5-yard penalty is issued the first time for an infraction, with a possible ejection for any offenders. Now,
hey, Dev,
are they saying a 5-yard penalty for the game, or if you come out onto the field and you don't have it, you get 5, and if you don't go back into the locker room and get, see, that's the part that's unclear for me. What are you saying, Kill?
I was at a question. Just imagine with the whole flag penalty, I mean, for the challenge, us at home watching the replay of did he throw it out before this time or not, the red flag going back into his hand and going down, and us spending like 10 minutes trying to figure out the
first
right
of
goal.
All, so in that case, we're lucky that John Madden is no longer in the booth, because he's going to rewind it. It's going to come out of his hand, go back into his hand. He's going to circle it on the telestrator. He's going to say, boom.
Did you see that? There? Boom. Boom. When he threw it out, and what we're trying to do is determine, see, right there.
Yeah, so John Madden would basically make a whole thing.
And a turducken. So you got to eat a turducken.
Yeah, for no reason.
As the flag flies, you got to make sure you had a turducken.
Yeah, you look at Matt Hasselbeck, and you don't think of him as a runner, but he's a very good runner. This is a bootleg. You see, he fakes the run to the left, and then he comes out here on a bootleg pass. He has the crosser who is covered, so he had to run. He had one guy on the outside, then he has Bobby Engram coming on the cross. He sees that he doesn't have either thing. He's not going to force it in there, so he turns and runs with it. Well, this has to be an idea that Mike Holmgren has now that he wants to bootleg, because on the first down play, he bootlegged, on the third down play, he bootlegged to the right. Then he comes right back with another bootleg. See, both backs go to the right. You see, Hasselbeck bootlegs out here to his left. So he bootlegged right and then came right back with another bootleg this time to the left.
He said bootleg like 65 times. So can you imagine that, like you said, with the flag? He's going to say something like 46 times about the flag. All right, so, of course, they're also going to place an emphasis on running backs grabbing a defender's face mask. A 15-yard penalty will be assessed if a running back tweaks his hand in any fashion that alters the defender's head. That's actually a rule. Now, I know a lot of people are, you know, every rule that we read or every rule that they hear, they're going to talk about how the game is changing and it's a pansy game and this and that. But that's actually something I always thought of. Because you damn sure can't grab the runner's face mask, but I used to see runners break out to the outside and just grab a dude and sling him to the ground. Like, I could see a stiff arm, but if you grab somebody's face mask and sling him to the ground, even I always thought that should be a penalty. Like,
LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yeah,
LaDainian Tomlinson to take his frustrations out on people's face masks and yank them down.
Now, y'all know they of course, the tuck rule is now eliminated. I don't even talk about that because I still don't understand the tuck rule. Unsportsmanlike penalties. Okay, now this is where everybody got into an uproar this week. Unsportsmanlike conduct penalties will be further emphasized this season, including any player who throws, spikes, or spins the ball after the whistle is blown, as well as any player who instigates a fight on the field. You know, usually they throw flags for the guy who retaliated, but they're actually going to review rumbles now and see who started it, and they're going to throw out penalties accordingly. So what do you guys think about? We already knew about most of that stuff, but the whole celebration stuff that came down this week. Fans are, like, up in arms, like the No Fun League and this and that. It's because there's a lot of things that's going to be unsportsmanlike. Let me read you a couple of the things. Unsportsmanlike conduct, the prohibited acts, sack dances, home run swings, the Incredible Hulk, whatever the hell that is, spiking the ball, spinning the ball, throwing or shoving the ball, pointing the ball, verbal taunting, military salute, damn, that's messed up, standing over an opponent, and dancing. So what do you disagree with, Kev?
Yeah, I disagree with all of that being a penalty, because fans pay good money, and when you go to Texas Stadium, good parking
see
money.
See that coonery.
It's in these games. So if you want to build that fan experience, you know, Jacksonville Jaguars are having blackouts sometimes because they can't get enough fans. So at least let the fans enjoy, you know, back in the day, the icky shuffle or sack dance or Neil Smith hitting a home run. I mean, that's, you know, so let them enjoy that. So to take that away, it just kind of takes out – it'll make the game more monotonous, put it like that.
Well, see, yeah, they clear – I definitely understand what you're saying, because I think looking into these rules are definitely stupid. But the response from the fans this week – oh, my goodness. I'm like, I didn't know people cared about their coonery so much.
Yeah.
Like, people were really up in arms, like, this makes – but that shows you that most people watching are casual fans. So they're more worried about the end zone dances than the actual X and O's of the game, what's actually happening in the game. Like, I'm a diehard fan of my team. If my team scores a touchdown, I'm happy. I don't give a damn about, you know, what the dude does after the touchdown. Sometimes the stuff is funny. So I understand what fans are saying, but the level to which there was uproar kind of baffled me a little bit. Like, who cares about this?
Yeah, but you have to realize that 80% of those that watch football on Sundays are casual fans who
have no knowledge of the strategy, have no knowledge of the offenses being run, have no knowledge of the rule book, have no knowledge of player strength versus player weaknesses, have no understanding of what they're seeing. Come on, we have these debates on a consistent basis with casual fans, and the level of understand, it's entertainment. So the strategy of the game, which is much like chess, you know, it's chess with human pieces. Most people aren't chess players; they're checker players. You know, so they want to see, you know, the big hits. They want to see cooning. They want to see shucking and jiving. They want to see dancing. And to be honest, I'm with them. I'm with them. You know, I watch the game from a different perspective.
I think it's stupid to legislate this stuff out of the game. I'm just saying. I'm telling you, if you saw some of the stuff people were writing on social media, I'm like, damn, is it that serious? That's all I'm saying.
I give it a maximum of 3 years of enforcement, and they'll change it up because they're going to see what the casual fan means to the game this is what that stuff means to the casual fan.
But they also clarified it, though, because it's not as bad as everybody's taking it. A lot of this stuff is only going to be called if you do it like towards another player. They're saying you can still spin the ball, but you can't make a catch, get up and spin the ball right next to the dude, land on the ground, or spin it in the vicinity of another player. You know, you can't point the ball to another player. Some of this stuff it's basically against taunting. Some of the stuff on that list you can't really help though, like hitting a home run, I guess, you know, you really don't do that at anybody anyway. You just hit the home run, so I guess that's just banned. But it's definitely a taunting thing. So out of the military salute, out of that one, I would figure in a PC America, they would never take that one out of the game. But they did go to clarify that, you know, a lot of these things would be fine as long as you don't do it in the direction of another player. So it's definitely legislation on taunting. So we shall see how it goes down. One more thing about the league before we – oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
Do you think eventually down the line if too many people start T-bowing or praying, you think they'll take that out of end zone celebrations?
Of course. Of course. Anything – if they look like they're having too much fun. You know what I'm saying? And
I think
you score a touchdown,
I think you get more.
Talking to God might be fun for people. So
yeah,
if you're having
too much fun.
I
think you could get more wind behind that sail than almost – than almost anything else, Akil.
Yeah.
Like, because you have the
they might be afraid.
Fans.
Right, they might be afraid to legislate that. They probably talked about it, and somebody probably put the kibosh on that at the meeting. Like, really? We're going to legislate?
But there are fans that hate that Tebow does that. So I think a large portion of people that would be with that.
That's funny though, because a lot of fans. You're right. A lot of fans hate that he does that, but they love the shucking and the jiving.
They
really
love
it. It's crazy, man.
Shucking and jiving, but the fact that he drops the one knee, oh, man. Can't have that.
So one more thing about the league before we go around to a couple camps. The NFL, they're finally going to examine the preseason games to see what can be improved in hopes of offering a better product in the future. In my opinion, they need to lower ticket prices, and they need to drastically lower ticket prices. For those out there who don't go to games, preseason games cost the exact same amount of money as regular season games, and you're not getting half the product because starters aren't playing half the time. Everybody's afraid to get injured. You know, you're trying to see who can make the team and whatnot. So you're not getting the same product, man. I've been to several preseason games, and that's the most boring thing in the world, man.
It's
the most boring thing in the world. Because that's funny. The funny thing is, as much as everybody loves football and can't wait to see football, and I'll watch football at any level, it's still a different feeling when you're watching football with a bunch of dudes that you don't know. Like, if you're watching a bunch of cats that you just don't know, it's not the same. Watching a bunch of dudes trying to make a team. So the preseason, there's no way in hell that they should be charging the same for preseason tickets as they are for regular season tickets. Regular season tickets are already too expensive in most cities. So they're looking at different formats to split the, you know, the split of the regular season and preseason games. They're still trying to get that 18 games. So they're looking at 18-2, 16-2, or 17-3. So they're going to look at the preseason this year and try to figure that out. And we already spoke last week of how they're making changes to the Pro Bowl. But I still won't watch. I'll probably watch the draft if that's live. But
even Jerry Rice said that he doesn't think the new Pro Bowl will work, and he's one of the main people a part of.
He's a part of the journey. I ain't crapping on it. Oh, Jerry not being a good boy. Come on, Jerry.
Yo, Dion just wants the camera time. He don't care if it works or not.
Yeah. Much camera time as he can get. All right, let's go out to let's go back out to Cowboys camp real quick. Now, Akil spoke about the offensive line. We all know 10-year vet Brandon Moore actually signed with the team. So they thought they were going to get some inside help at guard with him, and then a day later, he decides to retire. The offensive line, and this is in, you know, Cowboys brass words, they're saying that the offensive line is depleted. So, you know, they were really looking forward to that help, but Kill, I guess, dude, rather retire and not get a check than be a Cowboy. What's up with that?
Yeah, and the radio. And it's sad because the radio outlets down here, they started making, like, one dude made a song, like, telling how much he hated him for doing that because the offensive line is so bad. And the crazy thing is we've been spending money on offensive linemen in free agency the past few years. We drafted one first round. And some people say if Tony Romo had a solid offensive line, some people say, well, he would – fare better in a lot of these games. So it's just something that continues to be an Achilles heel for our team.
So where they're saying he would make better decisions because he wouldn't be under duress?
Exactly. Like, because what it is, some people will contrast the excellent decisions that he makes, you know, whether the center snapping over his head or him having to avoid rushes, the throw touchdowns, and then they say after a while you can only keep that up for so long before it comes back to bite you. So.
He can only keep it up to the fourth quarter. Oh, yo. I didn't mean to take a shot at Tony.
Yo, Tony Homo is all right with me, man. I think as long as the Cowboys have those challenges on their interior, with the big boys, the fat boys that really make the engine work, you've got an overrated organization.
I agree.
You know, that combined with Jerry kind of not relinquishing the GM duties, but if you can't protect Tony Romo, then you're going to run into those moments where he's going to make a boneheaded play. You got to take the good with the bad. Now, I'm as much of a Tony Romo fan as you can be, understanding that I hate that franchise. Like, I think he gets way too much criticism thrown his way. I think he's underrated. But he's not without his flaws, and I think the line definitely would help. I think a solid, consistent running game would help. But all of that stems from your offensive line, pass blocking and run blocking.
Dizzy. All right, so let's go out now to Packers camp. Jordy Nelson, wide receivers out for the preseason. He had to get knee surgery on Monday to correct a nerve issue in his knee. It's actually bothered him since he was in college, and it kind of flared up periodically, unexpectedly. James Jones also, he underwent a similar procedure. I don't know if it was last year or the year before that helped him deal with the condition. But Jordy said, you know, he could have played through it because he has played through it before. It's just basically a pain thing. So he still could have played and performed, but they're going to sit him out of the preseason. This is the kind of thing where you wonder why people wait. Yeah, the timing. You wait so long to do something. Now, I'm not saying because it just flared up on him at the beginning of camp. So, but if you know you have this condition, you know what I'm saying, it's still there whether it's flared up on you or not. So if you know you have it at the beginning of any given off season, go get it taken care of. So now you're not going to play in the preseason, which is fine, I guess. And I guess the procedure isn't as invasive as one would think because they're counting him in at week one. But I still look at it as something, because you can have setbacks. So I still look at it as something that you got to get done earlier, unless you're just trying to get out of camp.
I look at it as establishing, don't assume just because he's played with Aaron Rodgers for three seasons or two seasons or however many, that their timing is going to be right if he misses preseason and he misses practice reps.
Yeah.
So you come
and then Randall Cobb went down Tuesday with a biceps injury. So, you know, not just in Green Bay, but just around the league, these preseason, these camp injuries are just mounting everywhere. And, you know, they no longer have Greg Jennings. He's a Viking now, but he can't stop talking about the Packers. he's like a woman scorned, but hopefully he'll be quiet soon. Yeah. So let's go out to Bills camp. Kevin Cobb cannot stay out of his own way. He injured his knee in practice, but they weren't practicing. He slipped on a wet mat walking out to the field and tweaked his knee. So in a battle with rookie quarterback E.J. Manuel, you know, Manuel gets to get some extra reps, even though all reports say he looks like trash truck juice so far in camp. So with Cobb being day-to-day, you know, tweaking his knee, he probably still won't lose his upper hand on the starting spot. But that's been his problem. Like, Cobb cannot stay out of his own way. I think at this point you might be able to throw the fragile tag on him, the injury-prone tag, because even in seasons where it looks like he's going to have a promising season, you know, he goes down. Last year in Arizona, you know, they were 4-1. Cobb goes down, and the quarterback shuffle starts, and they just finished the season out terribly. When he finally got the job in Philadelphia, before halftime of the very first game, he was concussed. Mike Vick came in, and his job was history in Philadelphia. What's up with Kevin Cobb, fellas? Would y'all attach the fragile tag to him already?
Mr. Glass, please stay off your ass. Mr. Glass. Yeah, and I, you know, it's funny because I kind of hitched a little bit of a wagon to him because I see the talent, the ability, particularly in the West Coast offense, because he's very accurate. He's an accurate passer, decent arm strength, not great, but decent enough to run that system. So I think I want to see him stay healthy and play a 16-game season behind a good line with decent weapons. I think he's a good NFL quarterback, but he can't stay healthy. Dude gets injured.
Y'all can't forget. He's in the Hall of Fame, too.
I think he got a noodle arm, but that's just me.
If he sneezes, he's going to bust the blood vessel.
My neck!
Right.
My back! My neck and my back! Oh!
Okay, well, in other news, in Buffalo Bills camp, C.J. Spiller, of course, he's just starting running back this season, and the Bills plan to give him the ball. Offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett said in a radio interview that the offense is real simple. He said, we're going to give him the ball until he throws up. He said, so he's either got to tap out or throw up on the field. Let's just put it that way. And we know he averaged, he tied Adrian Peterson last year for average. He averaged 6 yards a carry last season. He got 1,244 yards on only 207 carries. So now it's time to be featured, and your offensive coordinator has already put it out there that you're going to get the carries. So it's time for C.J. Spiller to go out there and show everybody what he can do. I think when this story came out, he automatically shot up everybody's fantasy draft boards as soon as the coach said this. So we're going to see if
coach
put him out there to be a fantasy bust or not.
C.J. is a little dude. Regardless of whether Cobb starts or not, I think even defenses want to see whether he can throw the ball on. So whether it's Cobb or Manuel, you're going to see 8-man and 9-man fronts, and it's not going to work. I got him getting. He's not. He's from the original black man tree, but he is not the original black man, a.k.a. Adrian Peterson. So he's not going to take that type of punishment, man.
He's not originally second generation.
second generation. Yeah. Yeah, he's not gonna be able to take that punishment, man. So I had him injured pretty sick. What happened to my man Fred Jackson?
Yeah.
He said to you have him injured by what
week? Yeah.
Week 6.
Dang. Okay. Yeah, well, the depth chart, well, you know, it's still preseason, so we can't really speak too much on the depth chart, but we do know CJ Spiller is going to be the feature back. They got Stevie Johnson on the outside. I pretty much think Kevin Cobb will get the job with a short leash, and it basically depends on their record. I think if they go into the season, they can't get – because they are in a very weak division. So if they can't sneak out some wins in that division with Kevin Cobb at the helm, then I think E.J. Manuel will make his appearance and probably finish out the season, and, you know, it'll be his job from then on. And so he proves otherwise that maybe he can't handle it, but, you know, hopefully he can. So let's go out to let's go to the hometown. Let's go back to Eagles camp. We all know what happened with Riley Cooper. He's back in the fold at camp after his sensitivity training or whatever he went to. But the Eagles are losing receivers left and right. Of course, you know Jeremy Maclin left with the ACL. Aurelius Ben that they picked up from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he's gone for the season with an ACL. So it's starting to be very, very clear of why, you know, even though this whole situation with Riley Cooper was a big deal, why the Eagles have not budged at all as far as getting rid of him like a lot of people thought he should be. I mean, for me, I never thought that, you know what I'm saying? He just showed his true colors. I don't think that should hinder him from having employment.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Why
I just know that
racist,
I can't.
Racists deserve to work.
Man, if you couldn't work because you were racist, then the unemployment rates in America would be alarming. So,
in the 40% range.
Yeah. So, but it's becoming very obvious of why, you know, they're willing to put up with whatever this may bring to the locker room is because they need Riley Cooper right now. Actually, with Maclin gone, Riley Cooper is listed as the starting wide receiver on the Philadelphia Eagles on the other side of DeSean Jackson. So
yeah,
what do you
man,
guys think about what do you think about the whole situation, B. Austin? Do you think it's time for them to check the free agent wire to see if they can get somebody, or, you know, should they see what the young guns they got can do? Because they only have three receivers with NFL experience, and that's Riley Cooper, Jackson, and Avant. The other seven receivers that are still on the roster are all rookie free agents. So do you think they should see if somebody emerges from camp, or do you think they should be on the phone now trying to get somebody in?
I'm not being funny, but to be quite honest, in Chip Kelly's offense, with the guy that we think is going to start, there's no need to run and get some, you know, mid-level to formerly famous receiver. There's no need to bring Chad in, no need to bring T.O. in, no need to bring Randy in. I mean, in the offense that I believe we're going to run, I don't see the wide receiver getting the ball that much anyway.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Austin, I have a question. Is Riley Cooper right now better than Chad, T.O., or Randy Moss right now?
Better than T.O. by virtue of age only. He's not better than Randy Moss. Chad, I don't know. See, the thing with Chad is I don't think his physical attributes have deteriorated. I think Chad was just dumb. And I think that in Cincinnati, his dumbness, it didn't matter. It didn't really matter in the offense that they ran. And he got into situations in New England where the responsibility of the receiver, there was a little bit more of a cerebral nature to the game. You had a lot more option routes. You had to understand the coverages, make the reads, and make the right route decisions, and he could not do that. So right now, I don't even know if Riley's better than Chad physically. I think you may be able to take a flyer on Chad, but then it's a matter of the age thing. You know, the whole age thing. T.O. has been out of football for two seasons, and he's 39 years old. So I don't know what he could bring to the table. Randy, you bring Randy in. You don't bring Randy Moss in if you're going to have a running-based attack, and I think this is definitely going to be a running-based attack. It's going to feature Shady McCoy. It's going to feature Mike Vick getting on the edge. You don't do that to Randy Moss. So
yeah, see, I can't really speak on who's better. First of all, is because you know those guys besides Randy Moss haven't played, so I really don't know what they can do at this point. And then in Riley Cooper's case, his 3 years in the NFL, he's been a backup, so he hasn't really played that much. So I don't know if he hasn't played that much just because the guys in front of him were better, or you know, for whatever reason, I haven't seen enough of Riley Cooper, and I have no idea what the older guys can do right now. So it's very, very hard to make that distinction right now.
In Chad's defense, he was seen on a treadmill running at like 25 miles an hour. Not to say that that's football shit, but that's damn fast.
He was also seen headbutting a chick. Yeah, so the Eagles, I agree with you, because I was actually speaking in an Eagles forum the other day, and that question was asked, and I'm like, I don't think that they need to run out and grab somebody. I think they need to let the youngins rock a little bit in camp, see if anybody emerges into a player, and if not, maybe, you know, near the end of camp or right after camp ends, then maybe you scan the wire and see if you can bring somebody in, because if you get a veteran, you know, he's not going to need camp to catch up, even though, you know, Chip Kelly's system is supposed to be this awesome thing. But he's not going to need the whole camp to catch up. And if not, you just play him in certain packages until he gets everything. But like you said, I don't think it's that important because you know,
I don't think the wide receiver position is going to be utilized that much. If anything, we need to go get Algie Crumpler.
I can't say nothing after that. I don't know what to say after that, man. Let's try the homie Rob again. I see he's calling back in. Let's see if his phone sounds better this time. Rob, what's up,
hey,
brother?
Hey, Dad.
What's up, y'all?
What's going on?
Good, man. Dang, y'all jumping topics, man, all the day.
That's what we do.
Yeah, but, yeah, I like, you know, Chip Kelly's offense. I know personally because, you know, I've been seeing him destroy USC out here. It's just basically he's beating teams in space. That's about it. I mean, and the Patriots use the same thing, and that's what the Patriots do with Wes Welker.
Yeah, but we ain't got Tom Brady, and beating cats in space in college football is a little different than beating grown-ass gorillas in the NFL. It's a little different.
Tom Brady's another subject. I don't like Tom Brady.
You don't like Tom Brady? Why don't like Tom Brady?
Never did. I think that Bill Belichick holds a secret resentment towards that he's always been in Bill Parcells' shadow, and he needs a camera to catch up with the legacy of Bill Parcells, and Tom Brady, I think, was a product of that.
But Tom Brady, I mean, do you think, are you saying he's not as good as advertised? Or, like, I don't get what you're saying.
I'm saying that he's good. Because
he's good because he has good receivers. Other than that, yeah. Well, he won 3 Super Bowls with dudes who weren't really considered good receivers.
People can make
the argument that they knew what the defense was doing, but yeah, you still got to stop them.
Yeah, with Spygate, those Super Bowls are contaminated.
Yeah, I mean, I could say the same thing, and me being a Philadelphia Eagles fan, I could really jump on that bandwagon because one of them was against, you know, my squad. But, I mean, at the same time, I think the Patriots should have been punished a little more than they were punished. But at the end of the day, you know, I think the legend has grown, and I think people have made a little more of Spygate than it really was. They were stealing defensive signals. Okay, that I'm not saying it's nothing, but at the same time, as a defense, you got to go out there and stop them. They stole your signal. They might know what defense you're running, but that doesn't mean that a cornerback can't guard the guy that he's, you know, that he's guarding. That doesn't mean a linebacker can't shed a block and go make a tackle. You know, and back in those days, it wasn't like the Patriots' offense. Like, their offense didn't get, like, very, very, very good, like astronomically good, until after Spygate, when they picked up Randy Moss and Wes Welker, and they had something to prove to the league, and ran off 18 straight before they, you know, got upended by the Giants in the Super Bowl. So, you know, I think there's something to Spygate, of course, but I'm not saying if it wasn't going on that they wouldn't have all of those Super Bowls. I'm not saying that at all, because teams still had to execute. You know what I'm saying? So it seems like a cop out for the rest of the league, and a reason not to like, you know, the Patriots. Yeah, I mean, the NFL was dead wrong. Yeah, the NFL was dead wrong for, I mean, because Kraft is kind of one of the good old boys with the league. So, you know, they destroyed the tapes and let them move on with a slap on the wrist, a financial fine. But I still think people make a little too much of Spygate. Hey, but Rob, we got some more callers waiting. So thanks for your call, man. We holler at you next week.
All right. Thanks,
Big Rob.
All right, bro. No doubt.
All right, peace.
All right, we're going to go to Joe from New York. He's been waiting for a while. I wasn't even sure that was a real number. Joe, what's going on, man?
What's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Pretty
Joe,
good.
Joe, what's up, man? You're in the world.
I wanted to comment on. Actually, my name is Johan. I know everybody messed it up when they so he thinks Johan is my last name. But
what's going on, man?
My man,
I thought it was Johan. I said that all wrong when I did the video.
Yes. But that was all right. That was good. That was all right.
What's
so,
on your mind?
Quickly on that. I know we bounced around a little bit. I've been listening, but on this Riley Cooper thing, I think there's one thing about a professional locker room, in particular an NFL locker room, is that the players themselves will shake these things out.
True.
He's already gotten his cold shoulder. He's going to get some hits in practice. He's going to get some hits even in the games. So I don't have a problem with him, you know, not being kicked off the team. My issue is how things are dealt with. For instance, if he would have made a homophobic slur, a whole lot would have happened different than 3 days of vacation and going to talk to a counselor.
Oh yeah.
So that
they hold their political power, they hold more weight these days in the country than we do.
Absolutely.
They were waiting, so they were next up.
But what I found more interesting about it was like it was only like 3 days. I'm like, dang, y'all need to put dude away for a little bit. I get the fact that he's needed and that's why it's happening, because everyone's hurt. But I think the locker room will take care of itself, and he's gonna have to deal with people. He's a receiver. So all the brothers in that meeting room are brothers.
Right.
Except for him.
Johan, that was the point of my video. When I thought about the work environment and the working conditions that Riley Cooper has to exist in and under, I just smiled. Because I was like, across the ball from him, when I think about it, there is no more Jason Sehorns. So who's out there that's not going to fit the description of the word that he used? Maybe Eric Weddle. You know, so he's going to run into a ton of brothers. Everyone is going to use it as motivation and put it on the board in the DB meeting. So he's going to get his comeuppance easy.
Absolutely. And safeties are big.
Yeah. It's definitely a self-police type of thing. And like I said, I wasn't all thinking, oh, dude should lose his job because he said something.
Yeah.
Come on. It's just... I don't know. I agree with you guys. It's definitely a self-policing type of situation. Like Johan said, he's got to go through it with his teammates, and even when he gets acceptance back from his teammates, then it's time to step out, you know, onto the field against competition and see what's waiting for you out there. So he's going to have a difficult season, especially from a social standpoint. But, you know, mm-hmm. the fact that he's higher in the depth chart now, he might have the, he probably will have the best season of his career if he can stay healthy with all of these guys gunning for him. So, you know, we'll exactly. watch out for the Riley situation and see what's up. But, Joe, thank you.
He's
going to
be injured this year.
Oh, yeah. He might miss a few games. He's going to get another vacation at some point. But thanks for your call, man. We really appreciate it.
No
We're
problem.
Get out of here in a couple minutes.
Big up, Wallum. Do your thing.
All right. Thank you, man. Yeah, Riley, he's going to get his. And like B. Austin said, if people didn't get that when they watched his video on WarRoomSportsTV.com, that was the point of the video. You know, he was basically expressing his disdain for what the guy said, but at the same time, you know, there was no need for him to lose his job and this and that because, you know, it was going to come back around to him at some point during the season anyway. So let's go. Well, no, let's stay here for a minute because Mike Vick is going to start the preseason opener against the Patriots. Any surprise there?
No, none whatsoever with what we've been hearing and seeing out of camp. Nick Foles is trying his damnedest to hang on, but really I don't think he has the physical attributes and tools to really challenge Dennis Dixon is Dennis Dixon, and unless you follow football, you don't even know who Dennis Dixon is. Matt Barkley is kind of who I hold out hope for you know, long term, 2, 3, 4 years down the line.
I was about to say, I don't even know why you're saying their names because it's a two man race right now.
Yeah. Nick Foles just doesn't. In all fairness to Nick, I actually would like to see Nick in a conventional offensive system be our starting quarterback. I'm cool with that. But if we're going to go with the Friday Night Lights version of an offense that Chip Kelly wants to run, then you have to start Michael Vick because of physical attributes and what he can do on the edge. When a play breaks down, he just gives you in this instance.
Gives you what? So, a fumble?
But
Chip Kelly is still sticking to this competition thing, though. You know, a lot of us out here think that it's Mike Vick's job to lose. He's just not going to cop to that. And he said, don't look too much into, you know, who's starting this game. He said they're both going to get reps with the first team in this game. So he said, so whoever takes the first rep, let's not anoint them as anything. He said we have to have somebody start the game. But I wouldn't say the guy who starts the game is going to be the starter overall or in general as we go into September 9th. So he's still holding it out as an open competition between these two guys. They did say that Nick Foles is slated to start preseason game number 2. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on it now that they're going to play some live football, see what both of them do with reps with the starters. I'm assuming that they're going to go, you know, alternate series because, first of all, the starters don't play that much in the first series. So what if the Patriots take out their starting defense after one series? Then even if the, you know, Foles comes in and does well, then you're still going to have everybody out there saying that he did it against the second-string defense. So hopefully the Patriots cooperate a little bit. They actually had two joint practices with the Eagles at the NovaCare Complex this week. And so, I don't know. These teams are buddy-buddy now, I guess. Let's move on to Colts.
As a Cowboys fan, as a Cowboys fan, what I've gathered is that Chip Kelly has left it open for Michael Vick to run away and prove how much better he is than Nick Foles, and he hasn't been able to do that. And Nick Foles has had every opportunity to take the job from Michael Vick, but he hasn't proven that. So I think you guys might be in for like a two-quarterback controversy throughout the year. If none of them get hurt.
Because the veteran guy really isn't that much better than Nick Foles.
So it is what it is. That's the truth.
I ain't got time for none of that. Andrew Luck controversy.
So you all right?
Yeah. See, people think I'm playing. I'm a traitor. I'm actually going to the Colts opener in Indy. That's how much of a traitor I am. Speaking of the Colts, let's go out to Colts camp because Reggie Wayne, who played with Peyton Manning for 11 seasons, says Luck, his practice habits reminds him a lot of Peyton Manning. He said, you know, he's not really trying to compare the two and say that this guy is Peyton, but he said, and I quote, the way he approaches practice, I hate to do this, but it's somewhat like a Peyton Manning. Even though I hate to compare the two, he takes practice just like it's a game. He knows as well as I do that practice is probably going to be harder than the games because you're going to see it so many different ways. In game time, you may only see it once or twice. He gets us in and out of the huddle. He tells us to pick it up. He tells the offensive line, hey, we need to do better here. He tells the receivers, I need you to come out a little higher, whatever the case may be. So he's on it. Whenever your quarterback is doing that, you know you're in the right direction. So I'm glad to see him doing that. I think that's pretty high praise. In a lot of these cases, these guys always say the right things because you're not supposed to go out there and just throw your teammates under the bus. But, you know, some of this, I can look at it as being a little genuine because he really didn't have to make these comments. He didn't have to say anything. So I think it's high praise coming from somebody who played with Peyton Manning for 11 years to see those kind of traits in Andrew Luck and feel comfortable with his decision to stay with the team, you know, because by all accounts, the Colts were in for some serious rebuilding. So what do you guys think about Reggie Wayne's thoughts, and what are your thoughts on Andrew Luck before we, you know, last thoughts before we get out of here?
I think Andrew Luck. Well, first, I think Reggie Wayne is probably telling the truth here, and it's interesting that they say so many quarterbacks. Well, not so many quarterbacks. Every quarterback can't operate like a Peyton Manning, but to see that Luck in year one is trying his best to operate like a Peyton Manning. I think Luck, prior to going to Indianapolis, probably talked to every person he could to get as much information that he could about Peyton Manning. He may even talk to Peyton Manning himself, so he can try to pick up where Peyton Manning left off, which is almost impossible to do, but he did an okay job his rookie year.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to see that he's trying to be a leader and not just, you know, people just throw out that term very loosely. A guy can go into the huddle during the TV camera when the TV cameras are on you and say a couple of rah, rah, rah things, and everybody in the world swears that person is a leader. But, you know, he's actually out there being an extension of the coach on the field, you know, letting players know where they should be, where they need to be, you know, stuff like that. And I think that's a lot coming from a second-year quarterback. And I'm not saying that this isn't a part of the game for all quarterbacks, even all young quarterbacks, but a lot of young dudes are afraid to step into a situation and put their foot down and let these dudes know, follow me, because they think they haven't earned their stripes yet. So, commendable if it's true.
Barring no injuries, Andrew Luck will be the greatest player that we saw out of last year's draft.
Boom.
I'm confident of it. His ability to command the huddle, the respect that I hear from veteran players, the amount of responsibility that his coaches are giving him at this early stage, the types of throws that they're allowing him to make. There's not much dink and dunk in their offense. And then Big Shot, I mean, he's making intermediate throws 15 to 25 yards down the field on a consistent basis, along with deep shots. He's audibling already.
You made a great point. You said respect. You know what I'm saying? Because I see a lot of situations, like the one in Philadelphia. I think that situation is more fandom. Like the Eagles' young receivers and running backs and everything, I think they're all fans of Michael Vick. I don't think the respect factor as a football player is there like it should be. They're just excited because this is a guy whose poster was on their wall when they were coming up. But look, everybody, we got to get out of here. Thanks again for joining us in the War Room, good people. Shout out to everyone in the chat room on Facebook, Twitter, and all the callers who chimed in to holler at us. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for NFL preseason discussions
and everything else in the world of sports. Until then, enjoy your sports week, and we'll see you right back here next time. Be sure to catch our conversations on Facebook and Twitter and our videos on WarRoomSportsTV.com. Until next time, everybody, don't accept mediocrity and be steadfast in the war against ignorance. As Jimmy would say, we'll see you chumps on top.
All the blueprint.
Yo,
every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dev, PJ, BAuthin.Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. It's not dialed.
Call it
323 Brooklyn 0012. They be going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, let's talk push. Showtime like magic in the block push.
Magic.
Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip-hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secrets, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us. War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.